You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is the podcast where the dark and creepy things we don't talk about discover a voice. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
What happens when the shadows of your past refuse to stay hidden? When the whispers in the dark aren't just figments of imagination, but echoes of something far more sinister? I received a letter from someone whose life has been entangled with forces beyond comprehension. What could compel a presence to follow a person across years and miles, defying all logic and reason? Is it possible that some hauntings aren't tied to places, but people themselves? What torment has this individual endured, and what dark secrets are waiting to be unveiled? As we delve into this chilling account, we must ask ourselves, can one ever truly escape the grasp of the unknown? Let's listen closely to this harrowing tale and see if we can unravel the mystery that has haunted this person for so long. Perhaps there's more to this story than meets the eye. Dear Tony, I've been a longtime listener of your show and feel compelled to share my story that's haunted me for most of my life. My name is Michael, and the events I'm about to recount begin when I was just a child, yet they continue to shadow me even now. It started when my family moved into a modest apartment in Alameda. I was 5 and my sister Casey was 7. Our first night there, we heard faint music coming from the closet, a haunting melody that neither of us recognized. At the same time, we heard the unmistakable sound of rollerblades gliding across the ceiling above us. The apartment above was vacant, so the noises made no sense. A week later, we faced another bizarre occurrence. Ants began pouring out of the bathtub faucet, the kitchen walls, and even my bedroom closet, the same closet where we'd heard the music. Exterminators were baffled. No amount of pesticide could keep the ants at bay. It was as if they were being summoned. One night on May 1st, my dad was deployed at sea and my mom was working a late shift at the diner. Casey and I were alone. Around midnight, we heard muffled arguing in the hallway, followed by a chilling scream. We bolted out of our bedroom door, and that's when we saw them. 2 glowing red eyes staring at us from the darkness of the hallway. We hid under our covers, paralyzed by fear, until dawn broke. Hoping for a fresh start, we moved to Concord a year later. But the paranormal phenomena followed us. Within the first week, I heard a soft sobbing coming from the attic. My parents dismissed it as settling noises of the house, but I knew better. The air felt thick and oppressive. As months passed, the incidents escalated. Lights flickered, doors slammed, and objects moved on their own. One evening, as we packed to move again, I glanced out my window and saw a man standing in our backyard, clutching a knife. Gathering courage, I went outside, but as I approached, he backed away, eventually vanishing into thin air. Our next home was in Oakley. For a brief period, things seemed normal. Then on May 1st, it began again. My friend Sam was sleeping over when we heard footsteps in the crawl space beneath the house. We investigated but found nothing. The following day, a glass inexplicably slid off the counter and shattered while Casey's big friend Sam was helping with dishes. That night, during a power outage, we heard heavy footsteps upstairs. Impossible, given that the entire house was carpeted. The sound was like boots on hardwood floors pacing methodically. When we moved to Brentwood, the haunting intensified. Loud banging and scraping noises came from the walls. My computer turned on and off by itself. One night, my bed shook so violently, I thought it might collapse. Sleep became a distant memory. Desperate, I decided to bless my room. As I began, the lights flickered, my TV flashed static, and a gust of wind whipped papers and clothes into a frenzy. It felt like I was standing in the eye of a tornado. Then, as quickly as it started, everything stopped. The air cleared, and for the first time in years, I felt at peace. But peace is fleeting. On my birthday, March 20th, I was jolted awake by knocking on my closet doors. The next day, I called Casey. She hesitated before confessing that she and Big Sam had used a Ouija board years ago. They contacted a girl who claimed she'd been murdered by her ex-boyfriend and harbored a deep hatred for men. I laughed it off. A ghost with a vendetta against men seemed almost comical. That night, alone in the house, I regretted my skepticism. As I watched TV, my backpack flew across the room, striking me in the head. The hallway lights flickered, and I heard a woman screaming from my bedroom. I opened the door to find chaos. Objects flying, electronics malfunctioning, and in the mirror, a reflection of a woman with three deep cuts across her face. School offered no refuge. Invisible hands tripped me in the cafeteria. During class, smoke appeared above the doorframe but vanished when the teacher investigated, and friends began to distance themselves, uneasy with the strange occurrences that seemed to surround me. At home, the activity grew more violent. One evening, as I read in bed, the lights went out. I heard moaning from beneath me. When I bent down to look under the bed, I saw nothing. Trying to stand, I found myself pinned down by an unseen force. Panic set in, but when I whispered a prayer, the pressure lifted. The lights flickered back on. Casey, now living in Boston, called me one night in a panic. Items in her apartment moved on their own as well, and the dolls changed positions. As we spoke, we both heard sinister laughter, hers from the phone, mine echoing from my closet. Determined to end this torment, I reached out to a paranormal investigator. Together, we set up equipment throughout the house, reviewing the recordings. We heard voices, some pleading for help, others issuing threats. One voice, that of a young boy, stood out. He warned me, "She doesn't want you to know." "Who is she?" I asked aloud during one session. "Emily," the boy whispered. "She won't let us go." Digging through town records and old newspapers, I uncovered a tragic story. Decades ago, a girl named Emily was murdered by her ex-boyfriend. Her younger brother, Jacob, drowned himself in the creek behind our Brentwood home shortly after her death. That night, Jacob appeared to me in a dream. "She's angry," he said. "She thinks you're trying to replace me." "I'm just trying to help," I told him. "She won't stop until you're gone," he warned. The following days were a blur of escalating terror. Objects flew off shelves, mirrors shattered without cause. One afternoon, my dog, unusually calm, started growling at empty corners, his fur bristling. In a darkly humorous moment, I considered that even my dog was fed up with our spectral roommate. I decided to confront Emily, setting up candles and holding the old locket I'd found in the attic, a locket engraved with her initials. I called out to her. "Emily, I know your story. I'm sorry for what happened to you." A cold wind swept through the room, extinguishing the candles. Her apparition materialized, face marred by those three haunting cuts. "You can't help me," she hissed. "No one can." "Maybe not, but you don't have to suffer alone," I replied. She screamed, the sound that pierced my very soul, and vanished. That night, I dreamt of Jacob again. "Thank you," he said softly. She needed someone to acknowledge her pain. The next morning, the house felt different and lighter. Weeks went by without incident. I dared to hope it was over. Then one evening, as I settled into bed, I heard a familiar faint music coming from the closet, and my heart sank. Gathering my courage, I opened the door. Inside hung the locket, swinging gently on its chain, though I'd left it on my desk. "Won't you leave me alone?" I shouted into the emptiness. A whisper brushed past my ear. Because you're just like him.
Who?
But there was only silence. I realized then that Emily had mistaken me for her ex-boyfriend. My resemblance to him was enough to fuel her vengeance. The haunting wasn't just random, it was personal. Desperate, I contacted a priest, Father O'Malley, who specialized in exorcisms. He agreed to help. The night of the exorcism, the house became a battleground. Walls shook, objects levitated, and voices filled the air. Emily appeared, her rage palpable. "You can't banish me," she screamed. "Emily, you're tormenting the innocent," Father O'Malley declared. "It's time to find peace." She let out a laugh that chilled my bones. "Peace? There is no peace." In a moment of dark inspiration, I blunted out, "Emily, I'm sorry. I forgive you." She paused, confusion flickering across her distorted features. "I forgive you for what you've done to me," I continued, "and I'm sorry for what happened to you." Her form began to waver. "You? Forgive me?" "Yes." Tears streamed down her face, cutting clean paths through the blood and grime. With the final anguish look, she dissolved into a mist that slowly dissipated. The house fell silent. The oppressive weight lifted. Father O'Malley and I exchanged cautious glances. "Is it over?" I asked. "I believe so," he nodded. In the days that followed, there were no more incidents. Casey reported that her apartment was peaceful again. It seemed that acknowledging Emily's pain and offering forgiveness had set her free. But even now, I sometimes catch a glimpse of something out of the corner of my eye. A shadow that shouldn't be there. A whisper too faint to discern. I wonder if Emily has truly moved on. Or if part of her lingers, a reminder of the unseen scars we both carry. Tony, I share this story not just as a cautionary tale, but as a testament to the lingering impact of unresolved pain and the lengths to which it can drive even those beyond the grave. Sincerely, Michael. Is Michael truly free from the haunting that has plagued him for so long, or are some spirits too restless to ever find peace? I'm Tony Bruschi. If you want more true, scary stories like this, press subscribe. We're dropping new episodes every single day.
Want more ghost stories of the paranormal? Press subscribe now wherever you get podcasts. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day, all year long. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.